Good morning, Council. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. This is our second of three oral arguments for our calendar. This is case number A20-1107, Roy Danielson versus Commissioner of Public Safety. As both of you are, I believe, familiar, we will have 15 minutes for each argument and 5 minutes for appellant in rebuttal. Thank you for joining us through zoom.gov. Unfortunately, we cannot meet in person, so we are holding our oral arguments virtually per the Chief Justice's order that we do that for safety reasons in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. But we do appreciate you joining us this way. If we do run into any technical issues, we will make sure that we address them and allow each of the parties to have their arguments and hear the arguments from the other side. With that, counsel for appellant. One last item. This is being recorded. No other recordings are allowed, either audio or video. But besides that, with appellant, counsel for appellant, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Dan Kohler, standing in for Mr. Ramsey today on behalf of appellant Ray Danielson. Rather than start off with something flashy, I just want to inform the court we will be waiving the first issue that was raised in the appeal brief, solely going forward on the second issue, the appropriate burden to be applied in proceedings under 171.19. And in this case, we do primarily want to make sure that Mr. Danielson's case was reviewed under the appropriate standard.
Mr. Kohler, can I just ask for some clarification? When you say you're waiving the first issue, I just want to understand, are you saying you're just not going to address it at oral argument, or are you agreeing, particularly since it wasn't raised at the district court level, that it's not properly before this court?
Correct, the latter. We're withdrawing that as an issue on this appeal.
Thank you. I just want to make sure the record's clear on that.
Sorry, I might not have said that as clearly as I could have. So the only issue for this court's consideration is the appropriate burden and whether it was applied here. I'll concede it's not as clear cut of a case as Madison was, the case we primarily rely upon. Respondent pointed out that you could infer there were some credibility determinations made in this case. However, the district court's order is replete with language that applies to situations where no new evidence is presented whatsoever. Whether the commissioner's action was arbitrary, whether it was fraudulent, and that's not the appropriate standard. And I think it would be foolish to argue that that didn't color the judge's determination. So without even making an assessment of the merits of what Mr. Danielson presented at the court, what was presented does need to be viewed under the appropriate light. That's why we're asking for a remand in this case. I don't know if the district court is going to want additional testimony or is simply going to take the evidence that was already presented and ensure that he is applying the true de novo standard that Mr. Danielson is entitled to. But that's what we're asking for in this appeal, is a remand to make sure that this evidence is looked at in that way.
So, Mr. Kohler, if we were to agree with you and think remand was appropriate, what would you suggest should be the remand instructions? Because there was a hearing, as you agreed, and there was testimony. So what specifically should we be telling the district court to do on remand?
For example, asking the court to reevaluate the testimony and evidence presented in light of the fact that petitioner carries the burden of proof. However, it is a trial de novo, and the court is charged with independently determining whether or not violations occurred in this case with no undue deference to the commissioner's action. And perhaps.
Are you talking about the difference on your second issue? And I think this is what you're getting at. You're referring to the fact that there should be an evaluation de novo as to whether he had a second test of the interlock device. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, and in light of the fact that I'm waiving the first argument.
Okay,
so then whether or not Yeah, he whether he committed violation or violation.
Okay, and in reliance on that argument, you're saying, well, okay, the ignition interlock materials tells you to take a second test if something goes awry. Where can you point us to statutory or case law that says we should look at the guidelines as being precedential over statutory requirements? Because clearly it's not a part of the statutory requirements, right? You're conceding that, to have a second test on ignition interlock.
Oh, yes, that was one of the violations found by the district court, and that's found in the guidelines and in the contract.
Okay, it's in the guidelines, but you're not representing to us that it's also in the statute, are you?
No.
Then what case law, if any, would you rely on that would say that the guidelines in this case would control and be precedential over the statute?
None.
Would that be then a first impression issue that you're suggesting?
I might be confused, Your Honor, and I apologize.
Well, let me try again. Maybe I'm confused because I was misunderstanding where you were going at on the second issue. In the second issue, you're saying that there wasn't enough evidence. We need to remand it back to the district court to take further testimony. And as Judge Jessen asked, what on earth would the district court ask about? And that's a problem we always have with remands. Trial courts say, tell us what we're supposed to do. We already did it. And I'm trying to envision this going back and the district court saying, well, what would be the further testimony? And if the testimony that you envision is to support your argument that there was not a second test provided, under what theory is that even permitted or recognized under law?
Now I'm tracking. I apologize, Your Honor.
My inartful question.
No, I'm not even specifically asking or saying that there needs to be additional testimony taken. It's solely our appeal is involving what burden the district court applied to the evidence and testimony that was presented. If the district court thought that it needed further testimony, I believe it could have that, it could reopen the hearing. For our purposes, I believe that the reversible error requiring a remand was applying the incorrect burden of proof to the evidence that was presented.
So, Mr. Kohler, I think I'm tracking with your argument, but there are some lines in the conclusions of law the district court gave saying the record indicates the commissioner acted fairly. The commissioner's actions were also reasonable. And so while I see some of this, well, I see you're arguing, well, that the district court was looking to see if it was arbitrary and capricious and giving too much deference, but talking about whether it's reasonable and fair, that's pretty broad language. That doesn't seem to suggest that there's a lot of deference, an undue amount of deference given to the commissioner, so it's not a de novo proceeding. Could you help me with that?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's not as clear cut as the Madison case. Like, I admitted that out front, I'll admit that again now. But not just looking at that language in a vacuum, but looking at the rest of the order, it starts out talking about the burden is to prove that the commissioner's actions were fraudulent, arbitrary, or unreasonable. And that's not the de novo standard. And so I want to make sure Mr. Danielson gets the benefit of the appropriate standard in this case. And we're only going to be seeing more and more proceedings under 171.19. The use of interlock is expanding dramatically in Minnesota. And there's some confusion. I've run into this case in other cases where I've handled the district court proceeding, where even though Madison appears to be very clear, there's arguments from respondent, judges are confused about how they're supposed to view the evidence. Everybody agrees petitioner has the burden, but the burden to prove what? And in this case, there's enough evidence in the district court's order that it did look at this as though Mr. Danielson needed to prove that the commissioner acted fraudulently or arbitrarily or unreasonably. And a true de novo trial is going to weigh the commissioner's evidence as well as any additional evidence presented by petitioner, make those credibility determinations that were not explicit in this order. And some of them are pretty implicit. But mostly I want to make sure and think that it's reversible error for the court to have at least been very unclear as to which standard was applied to this case, to these facts. And that's why we're asking for a remand. And if there are no more questions from the panel, I guess I'll just renew our request that the court, that this court find that it was error in how the standard was applied, reverse this case for a remand, and I will reserve anything further for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler. Mr. Pesch, you will have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ryan Pesch, and I'm an assistant attorney general appearing on behalf of respondent, Commissioner of Public Safety. Appellant has waived the first issue in the brief, so I'll proceed with the second issue. And that seems to be that the district court improperly applied the or confused the standard review and the burden of proof. I think here, appellant seems to argue that because the district court made note of the presumption of regularity and correctness that applies to the commissioner's actions, the district court improperly deferred to that determination, to the commissioner's determination. And I think this misunderstands what it means to conduct a trial de novo. Case law instructs that conducting a trial de novo means that the petitioner is given a new opportunity to present evidence. The district court has to consider that evidence, but the district court doesn't have to accept that evidence is true. And the presumption of regularity and correctness still attaches to the commissioner's determination. Case law is very consistent. IGO v. Commissioner of Public Safety states that there's unreasonable standard, and Thorson states that in fact, the standard is arbitrary, and whether or not the commissioner's determination was arbitrary and capricious.
I think, I bet the cases you're citing are getting to this, but let me ask you, Mr. Pesch, in the plain English way that Mr. Kohler teed it up. He said, it's clear petitioner has the burden, but the question is the burden to do what? So I know you just cited some cases, but could you answer that question? So what exactly is the petitioner's burden?
I think the petitioner's burden is to show that the commissioner's determination was arbitrary or capricious or unreasonable. And because that petitioner couldn't do that in this case, the district court properly weighed the evidence, rejected appellant's testimony at the hearing because it was inconsistent, and then properly determined that he hadn't met his burden. I agree that the standard is a de novo hearing. I just don't think that a de novo hearing entails no weight on behalf of the commissioner. I think that is exactly what the burden is on the petitioner to show in a 171.19 hearing.
Okay, so if I can summarize. So it's a de novo hearing, but it's a de novo hearing about whether the commissioner's decision was arbitrary and capricious.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so that's a pretty high standard is your point. It's not de novo, would I have done this myself, right? I mean, just want to make
that's
sure
correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pesch.
Yeah, and given the fact that we only have this standard of review issue, and I think that has thoroughly explored in the case law, I don't have further argument to make given the fact that the first issue has been waived and this seems to be a very straightforward issue. So if there are no further questions from the court, I'm comfortable yielding the rest of my time.
Looks like there are not any other questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Pesch. Mr. Kohler, you will have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. And again, may it please the court. I think that in this case, trial de novo means that petitioner has the burden to prove that no violation occurred, and it's by preponderance of the evidence. I don't think the commissioner is entitled to the arbitrary and capricious or arbitrary and unreasonable or fraudulent standard. That is the standard that applies if a petitioner files a petition and presents no new evidence whatsoever. And is just saying, you know, the DPS got this ex parte communication from an interlock provider, this ex parte hearsay from a law enforcement agent. I don't think that's right. If you don't present any evidence, you need to show that the commissioner's action was fraudulent, arbitrary, or otherwise unreasonable. But again, under this trial de novo, I don't know why the burden wouldn't be preponderance of the evidence. And petitioner just needs to show there was no violation. The incident itself is at issue in the petition.
So Mr. Kohler, what's the best case that to support your argument that it's the burden to show no violation occurred by the preponderance of the evidence as opposed to a burden to show that the decision was arbitrary and capricious?
That's where I think this ends up as a case of first impression because I couldn't find it. Madison came after the Thorson and the Antel cases and seemed to somewhat implicitly overrule part of the holding in that case. I think there's been some confusion as to how these burdens apply in these specific 171.19 proceedings. And I don't know how a trial de novo even meshes with having to prove that the commissioner's action was arbitrary and capricious. There's some language in Madison itself. That I can't find right now, but there's nothing specific I've seen that talks about the standard. There are cases pre-Madison that do continue to bring up the arbitrary and unreasonable and fraudulent standard. But as a matter of common sense, that just doesn't mesh with a trial de novo. And so that's what I'm asking this court to find. Thank you.
Mr. Kohler, are you asking us to adopt a new standard?
It's the standard. I might be, and I wish I could be more clear than that. It's the standard I've used in these proceedings, and I've had district courts use in these proceedings in the past, the standard civil standard, preponderance of the evidence. And that, I guess that is what I'm asking for from this court.
Because I share Judge Justin's concern, if I understand her question correctly, of if you are asking us to adopt something new, what is the legal basis for it? I mean, we can't just create law out of whole cloth.
No, and it would be based on, like, and that's the thing, is this has been kind of vague and Wild West for decades. In Madison, the court specifically instructed the district court to make specific findings as to whether the appellant consumed alcohol that day. Again, focusing more on the incident that happened, not the commissioner's action. The trial de novo is geared towards determining whether the incident supported the response of the commissioner, not necessarily whether the commissioner's response was appropriate. A very fine line, but it makes sense to me that the trial de novo is actually looking at the underlying facts to see if that supports the commissioner's determination. And that, and again, I don't have any, and I've looked, there's no clear case law stating that standard, but because this is a civil proceeding, it would make sense to apply preponderance of the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kohler.
Questions. Thank you.
Does not look like there are any further questions. Thank you both for your argument and briefing, and in particular, narrowing the question. That certainly is appreciated as well. We'll be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time.